Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about the show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here is your host of the Chit Chat Cafe Live, Miss Nancy.
Well, hello, everyone. It's Nancy, and I'm so excited for tonight's show. It's a great time to join us on Chit Chat Cafe Live, as always. Time to relax and unwind and enjoy chit-chat with some former NFL cheerleaders. We're happy you joined us. Lisa is on assignment. You ready? In Spain. How lucky is she? She's also able to visit her son, who's doing a study abroad in college. So next week, we're hearing a full report from Lisa. Our guests tonight are Ron Chepstick and Will Hareb, and they are on, they're the host of Crime Beat, the show on Artist First, the most popular show that's right before ours, and that airs every week from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So stay with us also, our second half hour, Dr. Robbie Ludwig, a nationally known psychotherapist and the author of Till Death Do Us Part, Love, Marriage, and the Mind of the Killer Spouses. Well, I'm just thrilled tonight, everyone, on Chit Chat Cafe Live. I'm a huge fan. I have to laugh because my husband and I, if we can't agree on watching the car channel on TV, which he loves, or I happen to like some reality TV shows and animal shows, we are always watching police detective shows, Law and Order and such. So we both like to listen to all of the archives from Crime Beat together, and then we talk about it. So it's great fun at the Barty household. So tonight, we are thrilled to present Ron Hareb. He's an award-winning crime writer, investigative journalist, and a movie producer. Will, oh, I said that wrong. Ron Chepstick. Thank you. Will Hareb is a broadcast journalist and is a member of the Professional Writers Association in Canada and Superior Scribes. They host Crime Beat, featuring intriguing, deadly drug war gangsters, mafia stories, bringing American enemies to justice every Thursday night directly before this show. So I'm asking all of our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners, after tonight, you're going to fall in love with these guys just like I have. You're going to want to tune in every week to Crime Beat. Well, welcome, you guys.
Well, welcome. Thank you, Nancy, for inviting us on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. It's a privilege, and we're just thrilled and delighted to be with you tonight.
Right. Well, we just got through with a program on Joran van der Sloot. You remember him?
Oh, yes.
So it's going to be kind of nice to be on a normal show talking about some normal subjects.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that soon because for most of my life, I've been an advocate and a supporter for missing children.
Right.
And so I have been praying and following the Natalie Holloway case, so I'm going to ask you about that in a little while. But first of all, tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, take it away, Ronnie. Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, let me start, and Willie can chime in here.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, we've known each other so many years. I don't want to tell you how many because it gives away our ages, but we were boyhood friends, and we lost touch for a long time, but reunited back in the early 2000s, and Willie took a writing course off me and got interested and became started a successful career in writing and. We had talked about doing a radio show. We both had an interest in radio. We love interview talk shows and that sort of thing. And finally, I was interviewed by Tony Kay, the president of Artist First, for a book I had done. And I asked him about the Artist First network and would they be interested in a crime show. And he said they would. And they said they never had any anything like that, and they thought it would add to the variety of shows being offered. And so that's how we, you know, got on Crime Beat, and we've been on since January of last year, and we're having a ball.
Absolutely. Although Ronnie's a bit of a taskmaster, that's good. That's good. That's good for discipline. But anyway, as Ronnie said, we've known each other for many, many years. Ronnie grew up on one side of a park called Minnesota Park in the East End here. I grew up on the other side, and we played ping pong together. We played basketball together, he went to school. He went away to school when he was in his late teens, and I stayed here, and I studied broadcast journalism, and actually I wanted to be a sports announcer. After school in the early 70s, I took a job in the middle of British Columbia in the interior, and I had the job as a duty sports announcer. I went up there to take the job, but I got detoured in Vancouver, in a place called Gastown. Gastown in those days was like the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco.
Oh.
But anyway, I never made it up to my gig up there in Williams Lake. I never did get up there.
That's something.
Very short. But
well,
anyway, Ronnie and I, we reacquainted ourselves when he came back here to do a book reading at our public library, and I went to visit the session, and then we chatted, we reacquainted ourselves, our friendship, and now we're with this program now for over a year, and it's a real hoot. We're having a ball doing it, and the guests that we're interviewing are certainly fascinating, and we're really, really thankful that we've got a good audience base now.
Yes, you do, and congratulations on your 1 year. I did send you a little congratulatory note. I'm sure you got it.
Right.
Yes.
But I have to say, we're not only neighbors on Thursday nights, but we're also neighbors because I'm in Minnesota.
Oh, where are you from in Minnesota?
That's why I live right outside of St. Paul. I'm originally from the East Coast, and Lisa's still on the East Coast, but now I've been in Minnesota near St. Paul, Minnesota, and so Canada is my neighbor.
Wow. My cousins.
Yes.
Right, and I lived in Minnesota in the 70s, in Minneapolis for a couple of years, and I went to Moorhead State University, which is now University of Minnesota at Moorhead.
I saw that.
After Fargo, right. So,
now, Lisa, she's going to laugh when she hears this, because you would not believe, since we've been on the air for, a year and a half or so, we have so many guests with a connection to Minnesota, and she's always teasing me.
Right. Well, it's a great place, if you could put up with the weather.
I
remember those cold winters in Minneapolis, but I enjoyed it when I was living up there.
I like it, too. Well, I'm very interested. Why the fascination with crime?
Can you think of a more interesting subject than criminals?
Well, other than cheerleaders,
operate,
right?
And how they operate, and why they do, what they do. I mean, this Jeroen Vandersloot, he dominated the news for a couple of years, and I was just fascinated by his personality. He looked like a normal kid, good-looking, tall, and yet he was a monster, like these two authors we had on tonight, Lisa Pulitzer and Cole Thompson, that spent 5 years researching the story. And, it's just fascinating, and it's like being in a candy shop. You could talk to hitmen, former hitmen, about why they did kill people, in the course of being criminals. We could talk about the drug problem on the Mexican border. We had Noam Chomsky, last week, one of the biggest social activists in the world, eighth most quoted person in the English language.
Absolutely.
In history. And he was on our show last week, and we can ask him any question we want. Right, Willie?
Absolutely. It was really quite curious how we got Dr. Chomsky on our program. I had talked to Ronnie about... the possibility of having him on our show, and he said, yeah, well, go for it. And I said, okay, fine. So I called, I did some research, and I got a email address, and I emailed, and I got his secretary, and she said, sure, I mean, let's see what kind of time slot we could develop. And he's so busy, you know, this guy...
85 years 80, old.
85.
So
really?
He's got a schedule that would, would make you dizzy.
Yeah,
but
85
anyway,
years young is what they say, right?
That's a good way to put
sharp,
it. That's a good way to put it.
Sharp as a tack. Anyway, we did get him, and then the day before the show, I'll just tell you a little bit of a story. The day before we had him, we got him on our program, I had called the number that that his secretary gave him, thinking that I would have his staff, his administrative staff, answer the phone. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I rang him up, and on the other end, he said, somebody said, good morning. I said, Dr. Noam Chomsky, please. He said, this is Noam Chomsky. I nearly fell off my chair.
Wow.
And then we talked about what we might be speaking of in the evening, and it just goes to prove, just ask, and you don't know where it's gonna lead you.
You know, that's what we're finding
right.
too, and it's just wonderful to be able to speak to people that we have an interest in. Now, I did listen to your talk with Dr. Chomsky. It was delightful. I'm so glad that you got to interview him. You know, he's very influential.
Right, right. He's one of the most influential people in the world. He's considered the leading, quote, public intellectual is what they call him in the world. And but, you know, he doesn't make the mainstream media for some reason. You never see him on there. And yet, you know, everybody knows who he is. That's what's amazing to me is that you never see him on NBC, you never see him on CBS. Anywhere really, but if you get on the internet, you can follow him and pick him up. But he's still, a big name and a big person, and people listen to his views.
Exactly, and we're very proud that he was on Crime Beat. You know, to have
right.
a U.S. foreign policy and an activist for human rights—that's
right.
That's wonderful.
Well,
now,
he's got a lot of young audience out there. He's probably overlapped about six generations already. I know my son and his buddies listen to the show very intently. They're 25, 24 years old, and we had a big audience up here in Thunder Bay listening to that program, especially the young kids who go to the local university here.
Exactly.
Isn't that great, Nancy? I mean, we could talk to Noam Chomsky and this week we talked about Jörn Vandersloot.
Yeah,
I mean,
I want to hear about that.
And then next week, right? Next week we're going to talk with the American Sniper. You know,
speaking of that, I'm very excited
right.
for you to do that interview because once you check Cafe Live, we interviewed his wife, Taya Kyle.
Right. And how was that?
It was fabulous. I read that book in one day.
Wow, is that good, eh?
Yeah,
I'm going to start it this week. I've got it here. I'm going to start it this weekend.
It's a wonderful read. And Taya Kyle is in the book, of course, giving the wife's perspective. And
right.
she was a wonderful guest.
Right.
We have such respect for him.
Now, that's an interesting angle on
yes.
the story, you know, because everybody's interviewed Chris, but you did a interview with the wife. And I understand that he left the military because, you know, his marriage... He was having problems because of you know, being away so much. And is that true?
Well, she was very supportive, and in the book even, she's very supportive. And, you know, what's interesting is for both of our shows to be able to interview them, you know, he is the most lethal sniper in the entire right. history of our United States military.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, I just have such respect for our soldiers and our veterans.
Right.
It was an honor to have his wife on, so I'm very thrilled that you get
right.
to take it to a different angle and have him on Crime Beat.
Right, right. And we're looking forward to that interview, so it's
you're
going to
really enjoy that. The book is one of the favorite books I've ever read.
Right. Well, that's
I
great.
Felt
I'm,
like
I'm
I was
excited.
Right there with him in combat.
Right. It's going to be a real exciting experience. And, you know, the week after that, we go to Whitey Bulger. who's everybody's heard of, right? You know, we have somebody, a new guy on, just came out with a book, a new angle on the Woody Bozier story. So, I mean, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, you know, we get to ask questions that most people can't ask. You know,
exactly.
People,
now,
yeah.
I would like to get back to your interview from tonight. Mm. It was with authors Lisa Pulitzer and Cole Thompson.
Right.
And their book is the bestseller, Portrait of a Monster. For our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners who were not able to hear, and I am recommending that you go to the Artist First website. Actually, you know what? We have a link right on our website, and that will take you directly to Crime Beat, and click and enjoy their shows. But in case they weren't able to hear, what did they shed light on, or tell us some information?
Well, it was just a fascinating interview. They covered the whole case, and I was just fascinated by the story. And we talked about it because he was convicted, you know, found guilty and convicted, and sent to jail earlier this year. And we were talking about whether we should, you know, have a program on it because it might be a little bit old news. But the way they talked about the case and talked about him, and what happened to or what is not known about Natalie Holloway and the Flores woman, it was just fascinating, and it was a great pleasure having him on the show. And if you read the book, the research was amazing. Lisa Pulitzer started 5 years before they finished the book last year, and she interviewed. She had access to court records. She interviewed the police. You know, she talked with some of the family members, and it was just a tremendous piece of research. But you know, the conclusion is it's right in the title. This guy was a monster. He was a sociopath, a psychopath. And I think that there's, as they pointed out, there's lessons to be learned, especially for young people traveling abroad, right? You know, because they could easily get taken in by a guy like charmer, like Jorn Vandersloot. And some harm can happen to them. So it was quite interesting from that perspective, and to have the case summarized the way they did it, and they covered it. But the tragic thing about it is, we still don't know what happened to Natalie Holloway.
No, that is the tragic thing, and she's been in my prayers.
Right, and I asked them about that. You know, Europe is such a small island. But they said that happens. It could happen. You know, people can just disappear like that.
And so he's currently in jail. Is he serving a life sentence?
He got 28 years. He got 28 years. He's appealing, and he's wanted on charges here. He's going to be extradited eventually to stand trial here, and that's what the family's hoping for, the Holloway family, is that if he gets extradited, brought to the United States, maybe he'll make some kind of deal, tell them about what happened to their daughter. In return for some kind of more lenient sentence. But so ironically, they're probably hoping that his appeal is successful and his sentence is cut down, because if that happens, then he'll end up in the United States a lot sooner than later.
Exactly. Now, Ron and Will, would you be able to tell us a little bit about Jack Garcia? You had him on your first show. And then you had him return for your anniversary one-year show.
Right. You got to have him on, too. He's an engaging guest. He could talk
Absolutely.
About anything.
Absolutely.
Right,
great.
William?
Oh, that'd be
about...
fun.
Great
right.
guy.
He's
right.
a former
he
undercover.
Got us started. He got us started. And he wrote a great book. I mean, when we started this show, I got the book, and it's, I think, the second book in my whole life that I read in one day.
Really?
Yeah, it was so good. I mean, it was unbelievable good about his undercover work with the FBI and all that. And he turned out to be just a great way to start off the show. I mean, he was incredibly articulate, and was able to talk about so many different subjects relating to law enforcement. Of course, we were kind of a little bit of green then, right, Willie? We're just getting
well,
started.
Well, it was quite.
That, so.
Yeah, we were pretty anxious that first program.
Right.
I remember I set up my studio, which is a telephone,
in my cigar shack in the back, and I couldn't get a connection. It was 1 minute to nine. I had to run back in the house, reconnect. But thank goodness we did connect, and we had a glorious interview with Jack Garcia. He was great.
Well, right. That's wonderful.
One of the things we're doing is inviting. You know, usually when you have a great guest on, that's usually the last time he appears on a show, right? But what we're doing is periodically inviting former guests, some are really good guests, back to find out what's happened to them. What are they up to? We had Al Capone's grandniece on, and when we talked to her the first time, she just came out with the book, and it was doing okay. But you know, it wasn't like selling like hotcakes, as Willie would say. And then I saw her on Fox News in the morning. I was surfing the channels, and I caught her. I said, "Wow, there's Deidre." And she talked for like 5 minutes about her book, and then her book took off, and it became number one on Amazon. And I said, I told her, I said, "We got to get her back on, find out what's her secret for success, right? I mean, how did she go from just being, having a nice selling book to having a bestseller?" So we had her back on, and she's an engaging guest as well, very articulate, and so, we had a great show with her on it.
Yeah, and so
that's
was
wonderful.
Lou Diaz. So was Lou Diaz. Hey, Ronnie. Ronnie and I had Lou Diaz on twice. So he's a real fascinating guy. He was a ex-DEA officer. Yeah, he was terrific.
Well, now what about Dr. Michael Stone, The Anatomy of Evil?
Right.
Well, Dr. Stone was another really fascinating and intriguing subject. There was another fellow we took a chance. I had called his office, and who answered? Dr. Michael Stone.
Really?
And we started to chat. It's just amazing, and I was dumbfounded. And I invited him on the show, and then he says, "Sure, let's pick a time frame." And we picked one, and he was on. He was just a great guest. We talked about all these infamous people like Charles Manson, Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Interviewed them all.
John Wayne Gacy.
Interviewed them all.
Amazing stories he had to tell us.
And they are very interesting.
He had the Iceman on. He talked to the Iceman. This guy was a hitman for the mob, and he killed like 200 people. And we were fascinated by that, so we found out there was a good book written by Anthony Bruno. So we invited Anthony Bruno on.
He was on about
a month and a half ago. Right, to talk about the Iceman. Right. So we talked about the Iceman.
Oh, he murdered over 100 men.
Yeah. I mean, this guy loved to kill. And,
his
wife, the thing we couldn't understand was, and Anthony, stood by it, he said the wife didn't know anything about it.
Oh, and my goodness.
Right, and Willie and I both found that hard to believe, right, Willie?
Absolutely. But the thing is, we found that, his wife was a battered woman. I mean, he didn't take lightly to her. He broke her nose a few times. If she would have turned him in at that time, maybe he would have killed less people than he did.
Mm-hmm. Now, out of all of the guests you've had on, who scared you the most, or which story?
Ronnie,
well,
go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I know, we had a couple of hitmen on, former hitmen, that admitted that they killed, people for the mob. But we wasn't an intimidating experience.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of scary shows, like was listening to Dr. Stone describe The Anatomy of Evil, which is his book, and describing these people and knowing these people exist, and they could live in your neighborhood or they could be your friends, right? Or you could even be married to them, like the Iceman. And, I mean, that's kind of scary. And I remember, going to bed after listening to Dr. Stone. I couldn't sleep.
Well, I tell you,
he had such horror stories.
Yeah.
Right.
And Russell Williams was the...
There was another guy.
Yeah. Tell him about Russell Williams, Willie.
Well,
that's why he was on.
Yeah.
We got Russell Williams later, but one of the people he interviewed was Russell Williams, this very normal military guy in Canada.
Yeah, well, we got a guy. Since we're Canadian, we offer some Canadian content now and again. Managed to get David Gibb, the author of Camouflage Killer.
Right.
he described this shocking tale of this career Air Force colonel who led a double life. He was a pilot, and he was a cold-blooded killer. Like, this guy would be assigned to flying the Prime Minister around, flying the Queen when she's
right.
visiting Canada. It's just unbelievable, a twisted story. What a
twisted and he was
guy.
A rapist and a murderer.
Right,
absolutely.
He was a rapist.
One of the most diabolical criminals in Canadian history.
Right. And, you know, he turned the Canadian military upside down.
He did.
Because I think they changed some of the procedures to screen some of these people, you know, before they entered the military.
Exactly. Well, I have to tell you, even the cover of Dr. Michael Stone's book, The Anatomy of Evil, is scary.
Yeah, that's right. That's
the cover of it looks scary. And you had a rebroadcast of that also for your listeners?
Right. We rebroadcast every periodically. We rebroadcast
nice.
Right some of the programs. We take a little break, you know, like maybe a show every eight or nine, and we broadcast one of our better shows during that period, and Michael Stone was one of them. But we hope to have him back on. You know, he's another guest we keep up with, and we see him in the news. Something happened, you know, like there's a serial killer that he's interviewed or something. We're going to get him back on again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like Alumni Association.
Exactly. Like,
you
know,
and you got one. You ladies got one for the Philadelphia Eagles, right?
Oh, yes.
So it's the same
and we're
sort
not
going to
talk about, yeah, we won't talk about even hurting pets. No. Well, I really like your website, and we do have your link right on our website. So I'm encouraging all of our listeners, just click on the link on Chit Chat Cafe Live website and get over, and you can listen to all of these amazing archives. You just scroll down on the Crime Beat website and pick a show that interests you and click right on their show date. You can hear about all these stories we're talking about. I also like, gentlemen, how you have your calendar coming up so that we can see what we're excited to tune in for.
Right, right. And we've got some really great shows coming up. We have, you heard of Sammy the Bull, right?
No, I have not.
Right, we have his daughter on coming in.
Really?
Yeah, she wrote a book called Mob Daughter.
Okay, and then you have Rogue Monster coming up on May 17th with Mark Silverman.
That's right, and we've got one of the mob wives, or was it, I can't keep all those shows straight, but we have Linda Shiro on. She was the daughter of Greg, the Grim Reaper Scarpa.
Right, Greg Scarpa, right?
Right, right, and she's coming on. So, and it's always fascinating to talk to family members. We love
it
talking
is.
To family members. You know what I mean? That they're involved with that grew up or were married or whatever to these mobsters.
I tell you what, I love your show. I sincerely love to listen to it, and it's really fun. Would you two join us again sometime on Chit Chat Cafe Live?
We'd love to. We'd love to.
It would be our pleasure, Nancy. Our pleasure.
Right, and we're going to have to get you on.
Oh, Lisa and I would just love
that.
And you
know what? And you know what? You don't have to do a crime to get on our show.
Well, I'm just trying to think what crime we could have committed, because when we were cheerleaders, we both did the defense and the offense correctly, so that doesn't count.
Well, how about when you were a kid? Did you take any bubble gum that you weren't supposed to from the corner store?
No, I was too good of a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, but I have truly enjoyed having you on, and it is my honor, and I'm speaking for Lisa as well. We're just so proud to have you as neighbors on Artists First World Radio Network.
Right.
And Ron and Will, thank you so much. I cannot wait to have you back again. Lisa's going to want to talk to you as well.
Right. We can't bring you sugar, but we'll talk about your show. And we'll tune in, and we'll keep in touch, and we'll see each other again, right, on the airwaves.
You bet.
Yeah.
And I'm wishing you grand success next week, please, with Chris Kyle. You can even mention Chit Chat Cafe Live enjoyed the interview with his wife, Taya.
Oh, right, right. We'll mention that for sure.
Absolutely. And happy Easter to you, Nancy, you and your family, and best wishes to everybody.
You also, happy Easter, and thank you very much. This has been wonderful talking with the host of Crime Beat, Ron and Will. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
Bye.
Come on, Nancy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. I'd like to thank our sponsor, St. Croix Orthopedics. And when we returned, we're joined by Dr. Robbie Ludwig. She is nationally known psychotherapist. And we're going to talk about her book, Till Death Do Us Part, Love, Marriage, and the Mind of the Killer Spouse. Stay with us.
Stay with us.
Now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. I am so honored to introduce Dr. Robbie Ludwig. She's a nationally known psychotherapist, an award-winning reporter, and the author of Till Death Do Us Part, Love, Marriage, and the Mind of the Killer Spouse. Welcome, Dr. Ludwig.
Hello there.
We are so excited to have you on. We've been a fan and following you all over the place, from the Today Show, CNN, MSNBC. You're everywhere, and we're always delighted to watch you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You're the type of people I love to be on air for.
Oh, we love your ideas. Well, your book is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed writing it. I really did. It was actually the idea came to me via my literary agent, and it was a time when I was talking a lot about marital homicides that were going on in the news. You know, the news goes through different phases, and so this was a phase where it seemed like every case I was talking about, it was related to some partner killing off their husband or wife. And my literary agent said, hey, wouldn't it be interesting to categorize and understand these homicidal killers in a much more in-depth way? And initially, I wasn't so sold, because I'm kind of a happily ever after kind of girl. I like to write about positive, uplifting things, and that's certainly what I do in my private practice. But what really kind of struck me and what intrigued me about the idea was falling in love with your killer. And it was from that perspective that really helped me sink my teeth into the whole notion and psychology of marital homicide.
And who did you research first?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. There were the abandonment betrayal killers. So I believe it was the Broderick case. Are you familiar with that case? It was a case.
Remind us.
It was a case where the woman was married to this very successful successful lawyer, and she had helped put him through law school, and he had become very wealthy, and he was somewhat of a narcissistic kind of guy, very involved with himself. She gave him 4 children, and he was kind of the love of her life. And once he made it to a point where he was very successful and very wealthy, he then dumped her for a younger woman.
And that was Betty Broderick.
Betty. And she never got over it. She never, ever got over it. And what was kind of interesting was even after she killed off her husband and his new wife in the bedroom, which I thought was very interesting because the bedroom and the bed represent sexuality, she didn't seem to care. It seemed like she really felt like he was better off dead if he was not going to be married to her. And that was it was almost like that idea gave her peace. Even if she was spending time in prison, the idea that he wasn't with someone else was a comforting thought to her.
And you also talked about Scott Peterson.
I talked about Scott Peterson quite a lot, especially on Larry King. That was a fascinating case, I think, because Lacey Peterson was pregnant, and it had all of the perfect elements of a case that you wanted to just know more about. It had the affair, it had the very good-looking husband, it had the, you know, the couple that looked like the perfect couple who had the perfect relationship, and yet scratched the surface, and you could definitely see the psychopathy there. So that was a case that was really interesting to talk about because Scott Peterson didn't look like anyone who would ultimately do what he did.
We remember following that in the headlines. That was just shocking.
I actually met up with the Roaches. I believe that's what Lacey Peterson's mother's new name was. And I met the couple at Larry King's final goodbye party for CNN as he was exiting CNN and his longtime show. And the Roaches were lovely, and it was so rewarding to know that they had liked what I had to say about the case. So that was kind of a nice feeling that they were in agreement with some of my analysis.
And could you share with some of our listeners what your analysis was with Scott Peterson?
Well, in my book, I described Scott Peterson as the temper tantrum killer. And to me, that was someone who had this impulse control disorder, this violent impulse control disorder, against anyone that would say no. I mean, when you think about a 2-year-old who's going through temper tantrums, very often their whole thing is they get very angry when they're told what not to do. But with a toddler, they're usually manageable. And they're short, and they're cute, and it's developmentally appropriate. But with Scott Peterson, he clearly had a personality disorder. He was the love child, and I believe the only love child between his parents. So his parents came into this marriage with kids from both sides of the marriage, and Scott was the golden boy. He was, you know, the light of his mother's eyes. He was the good-looking golfer. He could do no wrong and was described as quite spoiled in growing up, and really kind of carried that mindset into adulthood. He wanted to do what he wanted to do, and he was a bit of a con man. He was very charming and very sexy, but probably somebody who always liked the idea of creating his own rules. And listen, most of us would like to do what we want to do and create our own rules, but we don't because either it's not right or it will hurt the people that we care about. But with somebody who has a personality disorder, they really don't consider other people. And so I think what happened was you have Scott Peterson, who marries Lacey, And she's almost like a Martha Stewart type of personality. She likes the home to look perfect, and she's about, you know, being a grown-up and having dinner parties and having a baby. And what I imagined happened was Scott Peterson either never wanted to have a child or felt very ambivalent about having a child. And not that that's abnormal either, but really saw, and maybe Lacey had conversations, listen, when we have a baby, you're not going to be able to go out and drink all night. Or when we have a baby, things are going to need to change around here. You're going to need to work harder and up the finances or whatever. She wanted Scott to be a grown-up, and Scott didn't want any part of that. Probably went along with the plan until he didn't want to go along with it. And what I imagine happening was at one point either Lacey caught on to the fact that he was going out and having affairs or caught him in something and kind of set limits, very strong limits, where Scott realized he wasn't going to be able to have his freedom much longer. And either it was an accident that he deliberately covered up, or he somehow intended to kill his wife so that he could maintain his freedom and the lifestyle he was trying to hold on to.
And how about we were just watching on the news as he was participating in the search?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, with certain kinds of sociopathic personalities and narcissistic personalities, they really believe that their charm or looking the part of a caring husband is enough to fool people. So he clearly felt he could either fool people and or by participating and acting like he was innocent, perhaps it was an undoing on some level, feeling like I really didn't do it. Maybe this happened just on its own, or wishful thinking.
Exactly. It was just amazing. Well, that's quite interesting. I was surprised to read in your book, you mentioned that every day 6 people in the U.S. are murdered by spouses or intimate partners.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that still the same statistic?
You know, I don't know what the current number is. I mean, to our credit as a nation, marital homicide has decreased. And I think that's in part because we have homeless shelters for women, and we have resources for people who have drug addictions and alcohol addictions. We have better resources for both women and men. But it still happens. And I think what's so interesting about the person who commits marital homicide versus the person who doesn't, like, for instance, there was just a case in Texas where a man allegedly killed his dog after the dog went to the bathroom in the house and then proceeded to kill his wife. So allegedly, this man got angry that the dog went to the bathroom in the house, killed the dog, and killed his wife, and said the only mistake he made is that he didn't kill himself. So, you know, sometimes we see these murder homicides because these spouses who kill their partners actually feel very dependent on them, and realize that they don't know how to live without their partner. The odd thing is that you can kill somebody and still love them. And in some cases, especially with abusive partners, they're trying to kill off the component of their partner that they don't like. But with the marital homicide grouping, they're not like career criminals necessarily. They're not people who, you know, have a history of burglaries and other murders or having these really deprived backgrounds. They in some ways look more normal than the career criminal.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You know, how do these seemingly normal and happy people manage to go over the edge?
Well, I think everybody could go over the edge. That's number one. I think everybody has a breaking point. Having said that, the person we expect the most from, the people that we expect the most from, are our partners. And so the people that we feel most angry with are family members or our husbands or wives when they let us down. And depending on a person's frustration tolerance or what's going on in their lives, you know, the worst case scenario can happen.
That's unbelievable. Well, your book mentions 10 personality types defined in detail. Can you share some of those with us?
There's the caregiver killer. The caregiver killer is the person who's the overburdened caregiver and is really burnt out and isolated and may even start to believe that they have a better sense of, you know, it's almost in some cases sometimes like euthanasia, feeling that their partner's not living a good quality life and perhaps they should just end it. Or the frustration and the anger gets so intense, that's how it ends up. There's the pregnancy killer. There is a study that found the highest rate of, the number one cause of death amongst pregnant women was homicide.
Really?
And, yeah. So, you know, we think of pregnancy as such a happy time and people being excited, but the reality is pregnancy raises a lot of feelings, and it's not always positive. In some cases, it raises feelings of envy or anger or a feeling that one's freedom will be taken away or robbed. And if you have an immature personality, or they feel jealous of the baby. The baby's getting a lot of attention.
That's terrible. And you also mentioned the black widow or prophet killer.
That's right. The black widow is the person who tends to marry. I mean, it's more of a deceitful reason. They tend to view their partners almost as like an ATM. When the money runs dry, that can trigger the murderous feeling. Or they go into the relationship with a plan in mind to actually get money. It's usually financially driven. I think what's very interesting is in real life, these black widows are not the gorgeous people as they're depicted as in Hollywood, but are usually your very average-looking person who kind of goes in for the kill by being a very comfortable person to rely on.
That is just amazing. And, you know, everyone enters into their relationship, marriage, is thinking it's going to be, hopefully, happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
In your research for your book, what surprised you the most?
Oh, that's a good question. What surprised me the most?
Was there anything that just, you couldn't believe this, what you were learning?
I wonder if it was more of a comfort. You know, I had this theory, I have to admit, I had this theory that was there some unconscious reasoning where somebody either was kind of unconsciously suicidal and that would get them to choose a homicidal partner. So that was kind of my working theory, wondering if that was going on.
That's true. That's a good theory.
And what I found out was, you know what, that wasn't exactly the case. You know, that there are people who just can be naive, or it wasn't until the relationship met up against a really difficult transition or conflict where the murderous impulses got somehow triggered.
And then you talk a lot about the peaceful versus the violent resolution.
Well, the person, listen, anyone who's married knows you can become enraged with your partner, right? We go into these relationships thinking, oh, this is the person that's going to meet my needs. They're going to be my knight in shining armor. And very
exactly.
Yeah, and very often what we find is, you know, that's not the case. That's not what happens. You have two people who go into it for, you know, they're just people, and they're flawed people, and they're people that may not meet your needs a lot of times, and if you're lucky, they'll meet your needs some of the times and be a decent person and grow with you. But the healthy personality has better coping skills, where they're able to resolve the conflicts in a more harmonious way, so that the conflict doesn't lead to murder. The conflict can then lead to, you know, humorously looking at what happened, or finding a resolution and maybe perhaps gaining insight.
Exactly, like normal people would do. But your book...
Healthy people. People who have healthy personalities, yeah.
But you just cut right through the sensational headlines and remind us all about some of these famous cases. You also talk about Clara Harris.
And she's, you know, where she's interesting is, too, she was a romantic and really thought she was getting the American dream. And her husband was a jerk. He basically dumped her for another woman and then kind of flaunted it in her face. And here's a woman who really just lost it, you know, really just lost it and just felt so enraged and didn't know what to do with her extreme emotions. I mean, in some cases, you can feel sorry for some of these people because they throw away their life based on a horrible moment, or perhaps a series of horrible moments.
I really enjoyed your book, and we have your link on our Chit Chat Cafe Life website that all of our listeners can click right on it, and it takes you right to your Dr. Robbie Ludwig website.
I really enjoy it.
You can read your blog and your bio and everything. It's wonderful. We've been meaning to have you on for a while. This has been a thrill discussing your book.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you join us again to discuss other topics. Would you come back again?
I would be honored.
Well, we would love that. Lisa, I speak for Lisa as well, and she's a huge fan as well as I am. So thank you very much, Dr. Robbie Ludwig.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to speaking with you again, hopefully not too far in the distant future.
Oh, real quick before we go, we just got an email from a reader that would like to know, a listener rather, are you writing another similar story about killer spouses, or a one-time book?
I think my next book would be something that is more relatable to people, but I'm still in the process of finding that right topic that publishers are interested in and something I'm interested in writing. So hopefully I'll find that perfect mix soon. But if people want to write in and give me some ideas about what they'd like to hear from me, I'd be happy to hear from you guys.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, and we can't wait to have you join us again for a different topic.
Thank you so much.
You enjoy your evening, and thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's a fabulous show with a lot of insight into crime, and tonight's our first ever Chit Chat Cafe Live Crime Night. We'd like to thank our fabulous sponsor, St. Croix Orthopedics, and Corey King, our producer. You can enjoy the Corey King Show every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Artist First. We're thanking our guests tonight, the host of Crime Beat, Ron and Will, and Dr. Robbie Ludwig. I'm leaving you with a favorite quote. Yesterday was Maya Angelou's birthday, and this is a quote from Dr. Maya Angelou. To those who have given up on love, I say, trust life a little bit. It's appropriate for tonight. Good night, everyone.